This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin this week with Nightbeat, their story from March 27th, 1950, titled Flowers on the Water. After that, it's Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, and The Case of the Murdered Detective, his story from April 6th, 1950.
Nightbeat. Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Nightbeat for the Chicago Star. In a newspaper office, the night seems especially reserved for all sorts of screwy crank calls. And if every wild tale that came in over the telephone was cracked down, there wouldn't be enough reporters left around to make up a game of solitaire. This yarn started with one of those calls, but it ended differently. And how differently it ended. It was 8 o'clock in the evening. A heavy rain was falling, and I found an excuse to sit it out by polishing my next day's monumental trivia for the column. I was looking for the capital A on my typewriter when the phone rang. Stone talking.
Mr. Stone, please listen.
I'm listening.
A bomb in the plane to Denver.
A what?
In the Denver bomb plane tonight. A bomb. Don't you understand?
What's your name?
You have no time. The passengers...
If you're on the level, you give me a name.
No, my husband. I've got to go now. My bus is leaving.
You're in a bus depot. Which one?
Mr. Stone, you're wasting time. It's true, I tell you. The Denver plane.
Well, what time does the flight leave?
8:30. Call till now.
You say 8:30?
Yes. Oh, please.
Well, lady, you phoned exactly 10 minutes too late. 20 minutes to 9 right now.
Oh, no.
I repeat, some nights are good for a dozen crank calls, but I couldn't take chances with this one. I called the control tower at the airport.
Hello.
This is Randy Stone, Chicago Star. You had an 8:30 flight to Denver?
Yes, sir, but then...
Oh, well, you better contact that pilot immediately and tell him to make an emergency landing wherever he is. Have him load the passengers and let no one near the plane till the police get there.
Yeah, but the Denver plane hasn't taken off. Fog came in suddenly and the plane has been grounded till it lifts.
Where is she now?
Far into the strip.
Oh, good. Well, keep her there and warn all personnel to keep clear and I'll be out there as soon as I can.
Well, listen, Stone,
you do as I say. I phoned police headquarters and they sent a radio car to pick me up. In 5 minutes, I was sitting in the back seat with Sergeant Skalski while the driver ripped up the streets at 70 miles an hour.
If there's anything I can't stand, Randy, it's bombs.
What time you got, Sergeant?
8:55. And me off duty 20 minutes ago. I was getting a ride home when the call came through.
Oh, there she is. You can stop here.
Okay.
Come on.
I don't mind telling you, Randy, I'm scared.
Yeah, me too.
I hope that call was a phony.
It was a bomb, all right, and a big one. The explosion threw me to the ground. When the earth stopped tossing me around, I looked at the burning DC-4, and people were pouring towards her out of the main building. I saw a jeep with a fire crew race for the plane, and I fought my way back to my feet.
You hurt, Randy?
I'm shaken up, that's all. We better get over there, Kalski.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Step back. Now, let's clear the field now. Back inside the waiting room, all of you.
The fire boys already have it licked.
Yeah. It looks like a ghost lying there.
Well, what do we do now, Sergeant?
Yeah? Poke around a bit. It's safe now. I have to make a report on this. CAB boys will take over in the morning, but I gotta make a report anyways.
Well, exactly what are you looking for?
Bomb fragments, maybe. Maybe a hunk of the container the bomb was in. Who knows?
Oh, this is some mess. What's this?
Let's see. Could be a bomb fragment. If you see any more, don't handle them. Prince.
You mean Prince would stay on after an explosion like that?
Yeah. Crazy, ain't it? Step aside for a minute.
What?
Another fragment, just like the other. And this one is embedded in a piece of leather.
Yellow pigskin leather.
Uh-huh.
Figure the bomb was in this bag?
Maybe. Maybe not, but it's something to go on. Now, let's go talk to the passengers.
Why would a passenger put a bomb in his own luggage if he knew he was going to be blown to kingdom come?
Nice guy, whoever did it. All right, folks. All right, settle down. We've got a little talking to do. Everybody here that was to be a passenger in Flight 63?
Officer, my name is Stephen Bradley.
So?
We're badly shaken up. Some of us need medical care. You have no right to hold us here.
Only the right to find out who tried to murder 40 people.
All right, Randy, I'll handle this.
Well, then it was murder. I knew it.
Now, take it easy, folks, and you'll all be out of here in a few minutes. I said quiet, everyone. Now, we'll call you up one by one. All you have to do is tell us if this piece of yellow leather pigskin was part of your luggage. There's enough of it here to identify. Okay, Bradley, you're in a hurry. We'll start with you.
Six potential corpses lined up and filed past the piece of yellow leather. None of them claimed it. Then Sergeant Kalski checked their addresses and gave them the routine spiel about being available for further questioning, and he let them go.
There's not much more I can do. Tomorrow the Aeronautics Bureau will take over. I'll phone my report in. My watch, right? It's just 9:45.
Yeah, it's right.
You coming back to town with me?
Well, if it's okay with you, I'll stick around here and do a little checking on my own.
Okay. But I tell you what, if anything hot comes up, call me at home. Don't phone it into headquarters. I don't want them to think,
oh,
you know.
Oh, perish the thought. Kalski gave me his home phone number and left. A little prodding and the baggage man remembered seeing the yellow pigskin suitcase. And then came the first big break. The baggage man found a delivery slip from the Minerva Messenger Service testifying to the fact that they'd delivered in good order one pigskin leather suitcase to be checked on the ticket of one of the passengers, Mr. Stephen Bradley. I found Bradley at his hotel. He hadn't checked in yet. Then I called Sergeant Kalski. There was no real welcome in his voice.
So glad you called, Randy. Got the thing all wrapped up?
No, but I found out who owned that yellow bag. Stephen Bradley, one of the passengers.
Yeah, I remember him. I'll go out and pick him up.
No, it's not going to be that easy. He's not at the address he gave us.
I'll get him, all right. So that's who it was, huh? 11 by midnight. What time is it now?
It's 11:25.
Where'll you be?
At the Minerva Messenger Company, 24-hour service.
Never heard of it.
You will. The brakes were with us. The Minerva Messenger Company had a complete record of the pickup on the suitcase. They'd found an envelope in the mail slot that evening with $2 bills and a key in it, and the typewritten unsigned note had instructed them to pick up a suitcase in the locker at the Arlington bus depot and take it to the airport to be checked on Stephen Bradley's ticket. It was nearly 11 o'clock when I got to the bus station. And near a row of long, unboothed telephones, there was a candy and cigar stand.
Yes, sir. Something for you?
Those are the only payphones here?
Uh-huh. No closed booths. When it's quiet, you should know some of the conversations I listen to.
I guess you make change for a lot of them, huh?
Yeah, it drives me nuts. My boss don't like me talking to men during working hours.
Well, I'm disqualified. I'm a reporter.
Reporter? No kidding.
No kidding. I'm trying to locate a woman who phoned me from here. She's about 20 to 9. Were you working then?
Yeah. Yeah, what'd she look like?
I don't know. She'd been crying. I'd say she was in her early 30s, kind of a sexy voice.
20 to 9? You say she was crying?
Well, toward the end of the conversation, she started crying.
I think I know who you mean. I talked to her.
Go on.
She came in about 15 minutes after 8, maybe 20 after. She looked scared, like she'd run away from somebody, so I watched her. That's my slow time.
You said you'd talk to her.
She asked me if anyone had left a note for Mrs. Curran or Curran, some name like that. Oh, Mrs. Hal Curran. That's what it was.
You think she was Mrs. Curran?
I know it. She said if anybody asked for her, that she'd be back. A few minutes later, she made the call. It must have been to you. She burst out crying and hung up.
What did she look like?
Like I wished I looked. Dark hair, 5'3" or 5'4". Beautiful figure. No wonder you're looking for her.
She was alone?
Nobody with her that I know of. And she got on the bus all alone.
You wouldn't happen to know what bus?
Sure, the Lake Forest bus. She asked me what time it left, and I told her. Say, that should make it a cinch. Her name is Mrs. Hal Curran, and she lives in Lake Forest.
Well, that's almost too easy. It looks like she loaded you with information knowing that I'd be around.
In a way. Maybe I don't blame her.
Now, what's your name?
Marion. Why?
Well, if this story breaks, I'll share my byline with you.
I don't know exactly what you mean, but I'm all for it.
I was looking for a Mrs. Hal Curran, the girl who'd phoned me from the bus station to so accurately prophesy the bomb explosion on the Denver-bound plane. And she'd left a trail easy enough for a tenderfoot Boy Scout to follow. In less than an hour, I was pounding on her door.
Is that you, Hal?
Open the door, please.
Who is it?
Let me in.
What do you want?
I want to talk to you.
What do you want?
I'm Randy Stone, Mrs. Curran.
I don't know you. Please, get out of here.
Oh, you called me earlier this evening at the Chicago Star, remember?
Oh, you're mistaken.
Mrs. Curran, you warned me that a bomb would explode in the Denver-bound plane. Well, it did.
What plane? I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let's face it, you're not very good at this sort of thing, Mrs. Curran. You gave yourself away half a dozen times. First, you made your phone call from a bus depot. I found out which one it was by tracing the baggage back to the Arlington. That's where you called from.
You're crazy. I wasn't out of the apartment all day.
Then you walked up to a bright young girl at the candy counter and asked her if there was any messages for a Mrs. Hal Curran. I talked to that girl. She described you to a T. Want some more?
You have no right to talk to me like this.
I'm just trying to refresh your memory. You took the Lake Forest bus, correct?
No!
You could have made it easier if you wanted me to find you, and I think you did.
Oh, I never thought of it. Stupid, stupid.
You wanted me to stop that plane and get to the person responsible, didn't you?
I tried to stop him. I begged Hal not to do it, but he was like a crazy man.
Your husband? He engineered this little thing?
Poor Hal. Poor mixed up Hal.
Well, give me a description of him. We've got to have him picked up.
No, it's too late, I tell you. He said he was going to take his own life after the bomb went off.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone. This month of September, many thousands of children will be going back to school. Four times daily, these children will be walking to and from school. You are urged to be careful, to be watchful, to be safe. In 1 year's time, 61,000 children were killed or injured by motor vehicles. Watch for children darting out from that blind spot between parked cars. Watch for them as they get on and off school buses. Watch for children playing on the sidewalks and crossing the streets going to and from school. Remember this. A child may dare, so drive with care. And now back to Night Beat. And Randy Stone.
I got his description and phoned it into police headquarters. I asked him if Sergeant Kalski had brought in Bradley, and they told me he hadn't. All the while I've been on the phone, Mrs. Curran sat there crying. Sergeant, if you locate Kalski, tell him I'm at... what's the number here, Mrs. Curran?
Evergreen 31074.
It's Evergreen 31074. Thank you.
Dead. It's my fault. It's just like I did it.
Well, there's no point in blaming yourself, Mrs. Curran.
It was the quarrel. Hal and Bradley had started the business together. They were equal partners.
Mrs. Curran, I'm a reporter. Maybe you'd better not say anything.
No. Just like I killed him, I've got to talk to someone.
He may not be dead.
About 6 years ago, Hal gambled with company funds. Bradley found out and said he'd prosecute if the money wasn't returned. Where could Hal raise $6,000?
Well, that's quite a mound of greenbacks.
They made a deal. Bradley was to get Hal's interest and agreed to keep Hal on as one of the shop foremen. After that, he lost all his initiative. He stayed a laborer in a business he'd created. I begged him to break away, but he wouldn't. We quarreled about it often. I didn't know it would lead to this.
Maybe you better try and have a rest.
Last night, Hal came home from work. I'd never seen him look so old and beaten.
Ellen?
Just a minute.
Hiya, honey.
Hi. How come you brought all your things home from the office?
Well, let's not talk about it now. I'm dead.
Hal, something's wrong.
Not now. After supper, please.
No, it's always not now with you, isn't it? Tell me, Hal.
All right. I lost my job. Out of work, canned.
Lost your job? Hal!
I'll get another one.
Bradley fired you? Why?
It wasn't Bradley. It was new people.
What new people? Why is it you never start from the beginning? What new people?
Bradley sold them the business. They didn't want me, so I'm through.
Bradley sold out? That business is half yours, Hal.
We've been over that before.
Oh, without a fight, you let him sell out without opening your mouth. What kind of a man are you?
What was I supposed to do? Hit him over the head?
No, that takes nerve. He's a dirty, rotten... And he didn't say anything to you till it was all over, huh?
No, he came up this morning and said goodbye. He's going to the coast to live tomorrow night.
To the coast to... With your money. And you just stood there and said, good luck, Bradley. Oh, Hal, this is the last straw. I can't go on living with a man who won't fight back. Spineless, incompetent.
Oh, that's enough of that. Shall I kill him? Is that what you want?
You kill? You coward.
I'm no coward, Ellen. And I'll prove it to you. I'm going out now.
Hal, come back. What are you going to do?
What you want? Kill Bradley. Kill Steve Bradley.
Oh, who said anything about killing? Just go up to him and demand what's coming to you.
That's not what you really want, is it, Ellen?
Oh, try talking sense, Hal.
I'm talking it for the first time in my life.
Hal! Come back, Hal!
And this was last night?
I didn't know he meant it, but... This morning, he brought it home. He had a gun, too. He said he'd kill me if I tried to interfere. He was crazy.
What did he do with the bomb?
He put it in the suitcase and made me go with him to the bus depot. Put the suitcase in the locker. Later, he had a messenger pick up the key and check the bag through to the plane.
But why a bomb? Why take the lives of 40 people to murder one man?
I told you, he lost his mind. He wouldn't talk to me all day. He just watched me every minute.
And after the messenger came?
He said goodbye to me. He said as soon as Bradley was dead, he'd kill himself.
Well, we've got to find him. When he finds out Bradley wasn't killed, he'll go gunning for him.
But Bradley isn't dead? But the bomb, you said it went off.
Well, it did, but the plane was still on the ground. Your call was in time after all.
Then nobody was killed.
What's the matter? Don't you understand? Nobody was killed. Nobody.
Hal killed himself for nothing. Poor Hal. Even this last thing couldn't come off right for him.
Well, I'm not so sure he's dead, Mrs. Curran. He may have been at the airport when the bomb went off. He may be looking for Bradley now. And with a gun.
He's dead, I tell you. He's killed himself.
The outburst tapered down and Mrs. Curran fell back exhausted on the couch. I called the police again, still no news. Neither Bradley nor Curran had been located. Mrs. Curran had fallen asleep and I sat opposite her and waited. I heard someone opening the door and I turned around. He stood there in the doorway. An old, old man in his early 30s. His shoulders sagged and there was a look of utter dejection about him. And he blinked stupidly at me and then he walked slowly over to the woman on the couch.
What's the matter with her? Ellen.
No, let her alone. Let her alone. She's exhausted. You're Hal Curran.
I got to talk to her. Ellen.
Mm-hmm.
Wake up.
Oh, what do you want?
It's me.
Hal. Hal, you didn't...
I couldn't do it. I couldn't go through with it.
He couldn't do it. He couldn't do it.
Ellen, what's the matter with you?
She's hysterical. That's what's the matter with her.
Poor kid, it's my doing. Ellen, baby.
Get away from me. Don't touch me. I hate you.
Ellen, listen.
I'm arresting you, Mr. Curran. A citizen's arrest.
Me? What for?
Well, just to remind you, the bomb in Bradley's suitcase. If that plane hadn't been grounded and your wife hadn't called me...
What are you talking about? I couldn't go through with it, do you understand? I was going to, but like Ellen says, I got no guts. When it comes to a pinch, I got no guts.
Oh, Hal, lying won't do you any good. Haven't you even got the strength to admit what you've done?
I took it out of the locker and brought it home early this afternoon.
But
you were out, Ellen. I disconnected the fuse and I put it in this drawer. That's the truth. Right in here. Come here, mister. I'll show you.
Well?
It was here. I put it here myself.
Oh, it's funny. Honest, it's funny, the mess he makes of things.
I'm phoning the police to come and get you, Coran.
Put that phone down.
Oh, give me that gun, Coran.
I mean it. I put the bomb in that drawer. Somebody took it out.
A gun, please.
Hal, what's the use?
Ellen, somebody took the bomb out of the drawer.
Coran.
Stay put, mister. I'm leaving.
How long do you think you'll last?
Long enough. And don't try to follow him.
I phoned the cops again and brought them up to date, and then I went looking for him. I figured he might be hiding close by. In a few minutes, the neighborhood was swarming with police, so I went back to stay with Mrs. Coran. I heard some movement behind her door. I was sure it was Coran. I wanted to get in quietly so that I could grab him from behind. A man was standing near Mrs. Coran when I got inside, but it wasn't her husband. Bradley!
What?
Oh, Mr. Stone. Oh, did
no.
you...
No, no, we haven't got him yet. It won't be long, though.
This the newspaper man you told me about, Ellen?
Yes.
Well, you've been keeping yourself, Bradley. A lot of uniformed men have been looking for you.
Oh, he knew at the airport that Hal had put the bomb there, didn't you, Steve?
Yes, I recognized the letter. I'd given that back to him for a birthday present.
Well, why didn't you tell the sergeant?
I wanted to square it my own way.
I tried to stop it. I tried all I could.
You tried all right.
Hal!
I locked the door. Line up against the wall, all of you.
Give me that gun, Coran.
Get back. I'll shoot you. I mean it.
Well, the cops will be here in a minute.
That's all I need. A minute.
Hal. Darling, put the gun down.
We can settle this without guns, Coran.
It came to me all of a sudden. A few minutes ago, I got the total. I did take that bomb home.
Oh, he's lying. He never came home all day.
So I asked myself. Who put it back in the suitcase and had it delivered? The answer was so simple, I had to laugh. Ellen, she took it back.
Me?
Coran, you're not on trial here. Save your defense for the right place. I'd suggest that you...
Don't move. Anybody tries to stop me now gets killed.
Why bring Ellen into this? Why don't you be man enough to take
her... I asked myself that, too. Why would Ellen...
Isn't anybody going to stop him?
Then it hit me. Ellen been working me up on Bradley. Not because he was running out on me, but on her. Get it?
He's crazy.
When I told her Bradley was leaving, I couldn't understand why she went wild like that. Then I started remembering little things, like useless trips Bradley would send me on, stuff like walking into a room and seeing him laughing about something. You know that. Special kind of laugh.
Hal, you're being ridiculous.
Poor Hal.
When he showed he was going to run out on us, she wanted him dead. And she took the bomb out of the drawer, rigged it up again, and sent it to the airport. You see the way it added up?
It's lies. Every word of it's lies.
You prove all that in court and you're in good shape, Hal.
I can't wait for the court to straighten my accounts. I just got the total tonight and I gotta pay it off.
Steve, he's going to kill you.
Hal, look, you're not yourself. What do you want? Money? I'll give you some. Lot.
Steve will make it right with you, Hal. He will.
Tonight. Tonight, I got the picture. Bradley. Ellen and Hal. Ellen, Bradley, and Hal. Hal always laughed.
No, that's not true.
You know when it all came to me? After I left you a little while ago, Ellen. I didn't go running through the streets looking for a place to hide. I went to the apartment house next door. I sat down on the fire escape.
Open up in there.
Keep quiet, all of you. Know what room I could see from the fire escape? This one, Ellen.
I saw Bradley come in.
Hal, you... Oh, Hal, Ernest. It didn't mean anything.
You ran up to him, and I saw a look on your face, the same look I used to see when we were first married.
Bradley! Bradley, you in there?
Hold it. Kosky's got a gun.
Shut up. You took that look away from me and gave it to Bradley. That made it a clean sweep for him, my business, my job, my wife.
Hell, I'll make it right. Just give me a chance.
You, Bradley, you don't owe me anything. It's Ellen. What she's taken from me, there's only one way to square.
Me? How are you... You're going to kill me?
Coran, listen. I believe you. The court will, too.
You love me, Hal. Don't you love me?
Yes, Ellen. I love you.
Then you wouldn't...
Coran.
Goodbye, Ellen. He did it. He killed her. Yeah.
Yes, I was in the middle of that one. Now I've got to write it up for tomorrow morning's eye-opener. Now, whose point of view will I handle it from? Hal's? You couldn't do that. He's a murderer, and you wouldn't want to sympathize with him. And Bradley's? What's he done that a million other men haven't? And Ellen? That reminds me of the song, Please Don't Talk About Me When I'm Gone. Now we better leave Ellen out of this, too. How about a nice bit on the grain exhibit at the museum? Hmm? Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. This transcribed story was a Lewis and Russoff script, with music by Robert Armbruster. The part of Ellen was played by Joan Banks. Others featured were John Stevenson, Paul Frees, Stan Waxman, and Sandra Gould. Frank Lovejoy appeared through the courtesy of Warner Brothers, producers of The Miracle of Our Lady of Fatima. Listen next week at this time, and every week, as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood. Protect yourself, your savings, your very way of life by becoming an investor in America. Buy new, improved United States defense bonds regularly. Yes, buying defense bonds is the way you can directly contribute to America's security and your own. And it's so easy to save the defense bond way. Just join your payroll savings plan where you work, or if you're self-employed, sign up for the bond-a-month plan where you bank. This way, you automatically put aside as much money as you want to each month. Before you know it, you have a backlog for emergencies, savings for a trip, the down payment on that new home, as well as having helped Uncle Sam in the all-important job of defense. And defense bonds are now an even better investment than ever, with new, improved interest rates and a quicker return on your money. So become an investor in America today. Buy more defense bonds more often, because they're now even better.
It's time now for Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons. Ladies and gentlemen, Anison and Kalinos present Mr. Keene, tracer of lost persons. One of the most famous characters of American fiction in one of radio's most thrilling dramas. Tonight and every Thursday at the same time, the famous old investigator takes from his file and brings to us one of his most celebrated missing persons cases. Tonight's case is entitled The Case of the Murdered Detective. This program comes to you from the makers of Anacin. You probably have occasion at times to take something for headaches, neuritis, or neuralgic pain. But if you've never taken Anacin, let me suggest that you do so, especially if you want incredibly fast and effective relief. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, it contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Your own dentist or physician may have given you an envelope containing Anacin tablets at one time or another. Thousands of people have come to know and prefer Anacin this way. So the next time you want prompt relief from the pains of headaches, neuritis, or neuralgia, try Anacin. See for yourself how incredibly fast and effective it is. Ask for Anacin at your neighborhood drug counter today. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Anacin is spelled A-N-A-C-I-N. Now for Mr. Keene and the case of the murdered detective. Our scene opens in the office, which Mr. Keene, the famous investigator, shares with his friend and partner, Mike Clancy. Telephone is ringing at the moment, and as Mike picks up the receiver, he hears a familiar voice at the other end of the wire.
Hello.
Mr. Keene.
Oh, this is his partner, Mike Clancy, speaking.
Mike, this is Jim Ryan.
Oh, Jim, my boy, and how are you?
Fine, Mike. Would you put Mr. Keene on the wire, please? It's important.
Sure. Just a second. Mr. Keene.
Yes, Mike?
It's Jim Ryan, the police force detective. He says it's important.
Oh, all right, I'll take it. Hello?
Mr. Keene?
Yes, Jim?
I'm calling from a phone booth in the Hotel Metropole. I'm working on a case, and I thought you might be able to help me out.
Glad to do anything I can, Jim.
Do you remember a man named Martin Cook?
Martin Cook?
He's in the real estate business. He was called as a material witness in an embezzlement case 2 years ago. If I remember, you had something to do with breaking that case.
Just a moment, Jim. I'll ask Mike Clancy to check through the files.
I don't have much time, Mr. Keene. As a matter of fact, I've been trailing Cook for the past 3 hours.
Jim Ryan.
Knife fight.
Jim.
What's the trouble, boss?
Hotel Metropole, Mike, quickly. Something's happened to Jim Ryan, and I only hope we're not too late. Here are the public telephone booths, Mike.
The first one's empty, Mr. Keene. Let's see if the other one...
Mike, help me open this door.
Wait, there's someone inside, crumpled up against the wall. Here, let's see if we can open this phone booth door.
Mike.
Saints preserve us. It's Jim Ryan.
He's dead. He's got a knife in his back.
Sure, he was one of my old friends in the police force. A better man never lived. I'd like to get my hands on the man.
Easy, Mike. Let's keep our heads. We've got work to do. These phone booths are isolated from the rest of the hotel lobby. That's why it wasn't hard for Jim Ryan's killer to strike and get away. Step into the next phone booth, Mike, and put a call through to the police.
I will, sir.
I'll notify the hotel manager. Then I want to pay a visit to a man named Martin Cook.
Martin Cook? Is he the man Jim Ryan was trailing, boss?
Yes, Mike. Jim said he was in the real estate business, and I want to find him before he has a chance to plan a getaway.
Here's the office, Mr. Keene. Martin Cook, real estate.
Keep your gun where you can reach it quickly, Mike.
I've got it handy, boss.
May I help you?
Is Mr. Cook in?
Not at the moment. I'm his secretary, Miss Everett. Did you have an appointment with Mr. Cook?
No. My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mr. Clancy.
Mr. Keene? The famous investigator? Please sit down, sir. Mr. Cook should be here at any moment.
Perhaps you'd better take a look in his office, Mike.
Yes, sir.
But I assure you that Mr. Cook isn't in, Mr. Keene.
I don't doubt your word on that, Miss Everett. However, I'd like my partner to search his office for evidence.
Evidence of what?
Your employer, Mr. Cook, is under suspicion of murder.
Murder?
Is that his private office, miss?
Yes. I'll show it to you, Mr. Clancy.
I'll wait out here, Mike, in case Mr. Cook arrives.
Right, sir.
This is Mr. Cook's private office, Mr. Clancy.
Let's have a look through this desk.
Mr. Clancy, who was murdered?
Jim Rhine, a police detective. A man with a wife and three children dependent on him. Sure, and when we get our hands on the killer, he'll regret it. I'll take these books and these business papers along with me. Miss Everett, whose picture is that on Martin Cook's desk?
Mr. Cook's son, Arthur.
Oh, he's got himself a family, has he?
Only his son. His wife is dead, Mr. Clancy. Mr. Cook.
Miss Everett. What's going on in here?
This man is an associate of Mr. Keene's, the private investigator.
I'll handle it if you don't mind, miss. You're Martin Cook?
I am.
Just a minute, mister. Mr. Keene?
Yes, Mike?
Martin Cook came into his office through another door.
Oh. Did you find anything?
Well, I didn't have much of a chance to look around before he came in, boss. I grabbed these books and papers on general principles just to read them over.
Mr. Cook?
Yes, Miss Everett, will you leave us alone, please?
If there's anything
just like... see that I'm not disturbed.
Very well, Mr. Cook.
Mr. Keene, if I recall correctly, we met for a few moments about 2 years ago.
That's right, Mr. Cook. It was in regard to an embezzlement case. I remember you helped the district attorney gather evidence to break the case. You were very brave to testify, since your life had been threatened by gangsters.
Have you come here to ask me for additional help, Mr. Keene?
No. This time, I'm afraid, you're not an innocent witness testifying for the state. You may find yourself a defendant.
In what way?
Do you know a man named James Rhine?
Is he a police detective?
Yes.
I believe I've heard the name.
He's been murdered.
Murdered? Oh, no.
And at the time, he was making some kind of investigation of you, Mr. Cook.
I see.
Do you know what he was investigating?
Jim Rhine was investigating a theft of charity funds, Mr. Keene. Funds I stole.
I see. And what about his murder?
You have no father to go to find your murderer. I killed that police detective.
Sure, and he admits it, Mr. Keene.
Just a moment, Mike. Mr. Cook, you say you killed Jim Rhine?
Yes.
When?
What difference does it make?
Well, what did you do with the gun?
I threw it away in the river.
Mr. Keene.
I must warn you, Mr. Cook, that anything you say can be used against you. But you're under no obligation to talk at this point.
Take me away. Put me in jail. I've admitted the crime, haven't I? What more do you want?
All right, Mike. We'll drive down to headquarters of Mr. Cook and turn him over to the police. Then we'll continue with our investigation.
What more is there to investigate? You've solved the crime, haven't you?
Not quite, Mr. Cook. I have a feeling there's a great deal more to be discovered, in spite of your so-called confession. Now I want to know who the person is you're trying to shield.
No one. No one. I tell you, I did it. Turn me over to the police.
Very well, Mr. Cook. Come along. But I mean to find out who you're trying to shield.
Well, Mr. Keene, we've turned our self-confessed murderer, Martin Cook, over to the police. Where do we go from here, sir?
To Cook's residence, Mike. I've looked it up in the phone book. Drive to Carroll Street.
Yes, sir. Sure, and when he said he threw his gun away, I got the shock of my life.
I tricked him into that, Mike. As you know, Jim Rhine was stabbed to death with a knife. I suggested a gun, and Cook took the bait.
But why do you think he did that, Mr. Keene? Confessed to a murder he didn't commit.
As I told him, in my opinion, he's shielding someone.
Well, I heard you tell that to Lieutenant Hale at police headquarters, too, boss, but the lieutenant mentioned another angle to it.
Yes, I know, and he may be right. Martin Cook may be a clever psychologist. He might be trying to get us to think he's protecting someone, just to make himself appear an innocent martyr. Cook could have actually committed the murder himself.
But according to his account books, the money he collected from them charities is missing, boss. That's why Jim Rhine, the police detective, was trailing him.
Yes, Mike, I know. Martin Cook may have stolen the money himself, or it may have been stolen by the person he's trying to shield. We're on our way to Martin Cook's house right now to check on that all-important fact. Yes?
My name is Keene. This is Mr. Clancy. This is Mr. Martin Cook's house, isn't it?
Yes, I'm Arthur Cook, his son.
I'm afraid I have bad news for you, Arthur.
Bad news? Has something happened to Dad?
He's being held by the police on suspicion of murder.
My father held for murder?
May we come in, please?
Yes, of course. You just about knocked the wind out of me, Mr. Keene. Well, there must be some mistake. My father...
He admitted the murder, young fella.
Admitted it? What? Who was murdered?
A police detective named Ryan was stabbed to death while trailing your father. Jim Ryan evidently had gotten information that your father was guilty of stealing certain charity funds that were entrusted to him.
No, Dad couldn't have stolen that money. I don't believe it.
But he's admitted that, too.
I must get hold of a lawyer. Just a moment, Mr. Keene. Hello?
Arthur, darling?
I can't talk to you now, Lola.
But Arthur, what's the matter?
I'll call you back.
You think I'm going to sit around in my apartment all day just waiting for your call?
Mr. Keene, where is my father being held?
At police headquarters.
I must go down to see him at once.
Since we're working with the police, you don't mind if we remain here and look the house over, do you?
There's nothing in this house that'll interest you, Mr. Keene.
Well, suppose you let me be the judge of that, Arthur.
Very well. Stay here if you like. I'm going to get in touch with our attorney and get my father out of this crazy mess.
Sure, and he turned pale when you told him about his father being a murder suspect, Mr. Keene.
Yes, Mike, and his reaction to the theft of the charity funds was just as startling. And I wonder why. A murder charge is a lot more serious than the theft of money, and yet... Mike, there's a small book for telephone numbers on that side table. Would you hand it to me, please?
Yes. Here. Hey, Arthur.
That girl Arthur Cook just spoke to on the phone. He called her Lola. Yes, there's a phone number and address in here for someone named Lola Slade. I think I'll call her.
Look at this house, Mr. Keene. Sure, it seems that a man who can afford an expensive place like this shouldn't be tempted into stealing money from charity cases.
That's exactly what I was thinking, Mike. There's something strange about it.
Hello?
Is this Miss Lola Slade?
Well?
My name is Keene. I was wondering if I could see you about...
I have nothing to do with it. Keep away from me, do you hear? Keep away.
Hello? Hello?
Did Lola Slade hang up on you, boss?
Yes. After protesting her innocence about something I hadn't even accused her of. Mike, this case has a number of odd angles. We'll have to check every one before we're absolutely sure who murdered Detective Jim Ryan. I have a hunch, in spite of Martin Cook's confession, the eventual solution will be an amazing one.
Just a moment, we'll return to Mr. Keene and the case of the murdered detective. Meanwhile, stop tooth decay and unpleasing breath. Yes, stop tooth decay and unpleasing breath that breeds between the teeth. Use Kalinos toothpaste with dental floss action. Your dentist will tell you, brush your teeth after meals to stop decay. Clean those cracks and crevices deep between your teeth to guard against unpleasing breath. Now Kalinos gives you dental floss action. That is, sends thousands of active cleansing bubbles to help dislodge bits of food that can cause unpleasing breath. What's more, foamy, refreshing Kalinos brightens teeth by removing ordinary yellow surface stains. Helps stop tooth decay. Get Kalinos toothpaste with dental floss action today. Now back to Mr. Keene and the case of the murdered detective. Mr. Keene, the great investigator, and his partner, Mike Clancy, are investigating the murder of Detective Jim Ryan of the police department, a friend of both Mr. Keene's and Mike's. Under suspicion for the killing is Martin Cook, who has confessed to the crime, although Mr. Keene believes he is trying to shield the real culprit.
Now, Mike and Mr. Keene arrive at the apartment of Lola Slade, a friend of Martin Cook's son, Arthur. Mr. Keene suspects that she knows a great deal more about the crime than she admits to. And as Mike rings her doorbell...
No answer, Mr. Keene.
Maybe Lola Slade doesn't want to answer, Mike.
Open this door. I'll force the lock.
What do you want?
Are you Lola Slade?
What about it?
My name is Keene. This is my partner, Mike Clancy. I spoke to you on the phone a few minutes ago.
Stay out of my apartment. Get your foot out the door.
Keep this door open, if you please, lady. Step inside, boss. I'll hold it open with my foot.
You've got no right to come in here like this. I'm no criminal.
A detective named Jim Ryan has been murdered, Lola. And we're working with the police. We have a right to question all suspects.
Suspects? I'm no suspect.
But you seem to know a great deal about the case. You protested your innocence over the telephone even before you were accused.
Well, I heard about the murder of that detective on a news broadcast a minute before you phoned, Mr. Keene. I knew that Martin Cook had been arrested, and I thought his son Arthur would be mixed up in it.
But why should that frighten you, Lola?
Well, I'm a showgirl, Mr. Keene. I sing for a living on the stage and in nightclubs. I have a reputation to consider.
Mr. Keene.
What is it, Mike?
Take a look on that couch.
Yes, I noticed that open suitcase. Evidently, Lola Slade was packing to leave the city.
But I have an engagement to sing in Los Angeles.
And that's just about as far away as you can get, eh?
What do you mean, Mr. Clancy? Have you brought the police with you?
Not yet, Lola.
I'll answer that door for you, young lady.
Mr. Clancy.
Boss. Boss, it's Miss Everett, Mr. Cook's secretary.
Oh, come in, Miss Everett.
Is this Miss Lola Slade? Well, I thought I'd give you a chance to clear yourself before I turn this evidence over to the police.
Evidence? What evidence? Are you crazy?
Just what is it you found, Miss Everett?
Mr. Keene, this letter came from Mr. Cook this afternoon. As his secretary, I open all his business mail, and I read it.
What does it say?
It's from a credit company. It says that unless $8,000 worth of bills are paid by Monday, Mr. Cook's son Arthur will be brought into court.
Let me see that letter, please, Miss Everett.
Here you are, Mr. Keene.
According to this letter, the items were charged and several bad checks were passed.
Bad checks? That makes it a criminal offense, boss.
That's right, Mike. The items include a fur coat and a woman's bracelet, both of which were sent to Miss Lola Slade.
But I didn't know Arthur Cook stole the money when he bought me those things.
Stole what money, Lola?
Why, the money that...
You mean the stolen charity funds? Judging by your slip of the tongue, Arthur Cook must have told you that he stole that money from his father.
Yes. It was only a few days ago. He came to me to borrow some money to pay those bills. But I didn't have any. Then he got the money somewhere else. When I heard the story of the stolen funds and the murder over the radio, I just naturally tied it up with Arthur.
Mr. Cook was right about you, Lola Slade. He did his best to separate you from Arthur.
You keep quiet, Helen Everett.
You bled his son for all you could get out of him.
I'll make you regret that.
Put down that fire poker, Lola.
I'll put it down on her head.
Not so fast. Give me that poker.
Let go of me. You're all against me, every one of you. But I'm innocent. I swear I'm innocent.
Waving fire pokers around won't help your case any.
When you recovered your composure, Lola, I suggest you tell the police what part you had in all this.
You're going to arrest me, Mr. Keene?
I have no evidence that you were involved in the murder of Detective Jim Ryan. At least, not yet. However, you may be involved in a theft before very long.
Mr. Keene, I told you I didn't know Arthur Cook stole that money from his father.
Miss Everett, just how were the funds stolen? Do you happen to know?
Yes, Mr. Keene. They were taken in cash from the safe.
The safe in Martin Cook's office?
Yes. Mr. Cook reported it as a burglary at first.
Well, Detective Jim Ryan must have gotten suspicious, boss, and followed up the case, getting evidence that it was an inside job.
I think so, too, Mike. Perhaps we'll have a look at Mr. Cook's safe and see if we can get any information from it. Lola, your attempt to attack Miss Everett is punishable by law. However, perhaps Miss Everett will forget it on the grounds of temperament and fear.
I don't want to see her in jail, Mr. Keene. I'll accept an apology.
I'm sorry, Miss Everett. I just didn't know what I was doing. I'm ready to go to the police, Mr. Keene, and tell them as much as I know.
Very well. We'll escort you to headquarters and then proceed to Mr. Cook's office. And perhaps discover the final information we need as to who murdered Detective Jim Ryan.
Come into the office, Mr. Keene and Mr. Clancy.
Thank you, Miss Everett. First, I'd like to examine Mr. Cook's safe.
The safe is in Mr. Cook's private office. I locked the door when I left before. The key is in my desk here. Here it is.
Oh, just a moment, Miss Everett.
Sir?
You don't mind if I smoke a cigar, do you?
Why, of course not. I smoke myself, but not cigars.
You have a match, Mike?
Sure, boss. I have one.
Wait a minute. Here's a packet of matches in the desk. May I have them, Miss Everett?
Help yourself, Mr. Keene.
Thank you. Now, let's proceed to Mr. Cook's private office.
That's odd. I know I locked this door when I left, but now it's open.
Miss Everett, Mr. Keene.
Arthur, what are you doing in your father's office?
I managed to get a key from Dad. I came here for evidence.
What kind of evidence, Arthur?
Evidence that will put me in jail for theft, Mr. Keene, and free my father of a murder charge.
You mean you're confessing to the theft of that money your father collected for charity?
Yes, Mr. Keene. They wouldn't believe me at police headquarters. They thought I was just trying to shield my father the way he's been shielding me. But I'm going to prove it to them.
Is your father also shielding you for murder, Arthur?
No, Mr. Keene. I didn't kill that detective, Jim Ryan. But I'm afraid Dad thinks I did, and he's trying to take the blame for me. He found out I stole that money to make up for some bad checks I handed out. Then he tried to lead Detective Ryan to believe he stole the money. Then when Dad found out that Ryan had been murdered, he took the blame for that, too.
I see.
I've been a fool, Mr. Keene, a spineless idiot. Dad gave me a generous allowance, but I wanted more. I felt I had to impress someone to win her love.
You mean Lola Slade?
Yes. Maybe if I'd stuck with a girl like Helen Everett here, things would have worked out differently.
You and Miss Everett were keeping company at one time, Arthur?
Yes. But when I met Lola...
You and I were never serious about each other, and you know it, Arthur.
But Helen, I
Let's get back to the stolen charity funds, Arthur. What kind of evidence did you expect to find in your father's private office?
Well, a letter, maybe, from the credit company, Mr. Keene. They called me a few days ago and said that they were going to contact my father if I didn't make good on those bad checks.
Helen Everett's already shown us the letter. However, there may be further evidence in that safe to support your father's innocence. Open the safe for us, Arthur.
But I can't open it, Mr. Keene. I don't know the combination.
Well, then how did you manage to steal the money, young fella?
Well, the safe was wide open when I came into the office that day, Mr. Clancy.
Was anyone else here at the time?
No, Mr. Keene. I thought it was odd, too. It was only 3 p.m. Well, Dad was evidently out on business, but Helen Everett...
I was out to lunch.
At 3 p.m? Miss Everett, would you mind opening the safe for us?
I don't know the combination either, Mr. Keene.
One lie is enough to give the lie to many other things, Miss Everett. And we'll find out if you're telling the truth about the safe.
But I am.
Mike, call Martin Cook at police headquarters and ask him if anyone else outside of himself knows the combination to his safe. I'll wager that he trusted Miss Everett with it, since he seemed to trust her with everything else.
Mr. Keene, are you trying to say that I stole that money?
No, of course not, Miss Everett. Arthur Cook here admits to the theft. But what I do say is this. You left that safe open so Arthur would be tempted to take those charity funds, knowing he needed the money badly.
That's a lie.
Miss Everett, have you ever been to the Hotel Metropole where Detective Ryan was murdered?
No.
Then what are you doing with these matches with the hotel's name on the cover? They're the weapons I took from your desk.
Mr. Keene, now I see it all. Helen Everett tried to get even with me. She gave me the chance to take the money before she knew about Lola Slade.
I'll jam this letter knife into the first one who moves. Stay where you are, all of you.
That's all I was waiting for, Helen Everett. I wanted to see you give yourself away and prove my theory correct. You murdered Detective Ryan. While he was following Martin Cook, you were following him.
He got as far as you've just gotten, Keene. He was just about to arrest Mr. Cook, and he would have included me as an accessory. But he got no further. And neither will you.
Look out, Mr. Keene.
Get your hands off me. Let me go.
Quiet now. That's the last knife you've been throwing, lady.
Good thing you caught her arm, Mike. That knife missed me by only an inch. Helen Everett had it all planned. She thought that if she murdered Detective Ryan, Arthur Cook would be held for the crime. And at the same time, she'd get rid of any evidence that she induced Arthur to steal that money.
I loved him. I loved Arthur, and he turned me down for that painted fool of a showgirl. I was willing to steal for him, lie for him, cheat for him.
When your love turned to hate, you were also ready to murder. I wondered why you forgave Lola Slade so quickly. As much as you hated Lola, it was Arthur you wanted to strike back at.
Yes. And I'd do it again if I had the chance.
You won't get that chance, Miss Everett, I assure you. All you can look forward to now is payment for your crimes in full.
And so Mr. Keene finds the solution to the case of the murdered detective. The next time you're suffering from the pains of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia, try Anacin. You'll bless the day you heard of this incredibly fast way to relieve these pains. Now, the reason Anacin is so wonderfully fast-acting and effective is this. Anacin is like a doctor's prescription. That is, Anacin contains not just one, but a combination of medically proven, active ingredients in easy-to-take tablet form. Thousands of people have received envelopes containing Anacin tablets from their own dentist or physician. And in this way have discovered the incredibly fast relief Anacin brings from pain of headache, neuritis, or neuralgia. So next time such pains strike, take Anacin. For most effective relief, use only as directed. Your druggist has Anacin handy boxes of 12 and 30 and economical family-sized bottles of 50 and 100. The name is Anacin, A-N-A-C-I-N. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, is based on the novel Mr. Keene. The radio sequel is originated and produced by Frank and Ann Hummert. Dialogue by Lawrence Klee. Bennett Kilpack plays Mr. Keene. It is on the air every Thursday at this time. Don't miss Mr. Keene next Thursday when the kindly old Tracer turns to the eccentric millionaire murder case. Ever suffer heartburn or upset stomach from acid indigestion? Safe new Bisodol mints, medically proven, quickly rid stomach of that blown-up feeling. Give longer-lasting relief than baking soda. Yes, hours of relief. Bisodol mints not only neutralize, but actually carry away excess stomach acids. Soothe irritated stomach lining. Let you sleep all night long when acid indigestion strikes. Carry new Bisodol mints for fast relief anywhere, anytime. Mr. Keene, Tracer of Lost Persons, will be on the air next Thursday at this same time. This is Larry Elliott saying goodbye for Mr. Keene and the Whitehall Pharmacal Company, makers of Anacin and Kalinos, and many other dependable high-quality drug products. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's Case Closed for this week. I hope you enjoyed the shows this time. You can find more from Nightbeat, Mr. Keene, past episodes of this show, and everything Relic Radio at relicradio.com. Shoutcast stream is there as well, and our donate button. If you'd like to help support this and all the shows, you can donate through the website. Give that a click. You'll see our downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, though any amount is always appreciated. You can visit donate.relicradio.com. It's a shortcut to that page, too. If you would like to help out, my thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. Talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.